Good afternoon in the East, good morning in the West. Welcome to the Jeff Merrick Show once again. The big headline from last night, Anaheim Ducks Executive VP and General Manager Bob Murray resigns and enters an alcohol abuse program. One of the many stories we're covering this afternoon slash this morning on the program. Eric Stevens covers the Ducks for the Athletic. He'll drop by in a couple of moments. Mike Kelly from the NHL Network. A tour around some of the players that have the best underlying numbers for all the Canadian NHL teams. Craig McTavish, whom you saw last night on Scotiabank Wednesday Night Hockey, along with Carolyn Cameron and Anthony Stewart. He'll drop by. Craig now of the NHL on Sportsnet. Recap of yesterday's Flyers-Leafs game. And also Hal Gill, our radio analyst for the Nashville Predators. Preds off to a 7-5-1 start, beat Dallas last night. We'll talk to Hal about the Preds' point of view, but we should park some time as well to talk about the Dallas Stars and what's next. If you missed the Rick Bowness press conference last night, don't feel special. It was only 29 seconds. The team is not making the audio or video available anywhere, but we have the transcript. I will read it to you. Meanwhile, a situation in the nation's capital right now, the Ottawa Senators today adding two more names to their COVID-19 protocol list, Alex Formanton and Matt Murray, which brings the number now to eight players and one assistant coach. That is, of course, Jack Capuano. Ian Mendez has been all over this story. He joins us. Ian, of course, from The Athletic. Ian, thanks so much for doing this. What is the team play? Let's get this straight. The team plays the Los Angeles Kings tonight. And I just throw it there on Twitter. I'm not sure whether this is a good idea to go ahead with this game. I know schedules are schedules and they're difficult to reprogram. But what is the feeling around the Sens organization about this game tonight?
Yeah, and I think there's some hesitation. Like, DJ Smith spoke to the media today and basically said, look, I just get paid to coach the games, and they tell me if whether or not they're following the health protocols, and you know, the NHL and the NHLPA is certainly involved in making the decision here on whether or not to play. What about the irony of this, Jeff? Remember, these were the two teams that played on the night when the world shut down. Remember, it was Ottawa and LA that played in that game in March That's of 2020, right. And we debated that night. Should they be playing? Look at what's happening with Rudy Gobert and they played.
Oh, wow,
and
you're right. Yeah.
Here we go with the old, hey, maybe time is a flat circle, argument that it's Ottawa and LA and should we be playing this game? Eight guys for Ottawa will be out of the lineup tonight, and they're basically going to be icing a quasi AHL team. And the thing that I'm blown away at, Alex Formanton got put on the COVID list today, Jeff, when mm-hmm. they played against Boston on Tuesday night. Alex Formanton got into a fight with, it was Connor Clifton from Boston. Yeah, okay. They're face-to-face, jawing at each other, and, you know that there's spit is flying. And now I'm thinking, if Alex Formanton is in COVID protocol, what does that mean for Connor Clifton? What does that mean for the Boston Bruins? And that's where it becomes the question of should they be playing tonight, because clearly we're seeing there's a delayed reaction here, and if we know anything about COVID, you could potentially get it, and it could be up to 14 days before the symptoms start showing and you start testing positive. This is the problem for Ottawa. It feels like every day we hit refresh and one or two more guys is being added to the list.
And Edmonton plays Boston tonight as well, if we're following that chain. And also, you know, after that Boston game, you know, Josh Brown lays out Trent Frederick with a humongous hit. The next day, Josh Brown himself goes into protocol for the Ottawa Senators as well. So it's Formanton, Murray, Josh Brown, Connor Brown, Dylan Gambrell, Victor Mete, Nick Holden, Austin Watson as well. Do you have any sense of how the players feel about this one? Like, I know DJ Smithian will say, like, listen, I'm a coach. I'm paid to coach. I don't make these decisions. I'm here doing my job. Have you been able to talk, text with any of the players and sort of get a mood? Like, San Jose went through a situation as well where they had a number of players in COVID-19 protocol as well, and they went on and played. And that's what many people are pointing to. Like, hold on a second here. They made San Jose play. Why shouldn't Ottawa play? But what do the players, if you know, feel? How do the players feel about this?
Yeah, and, you know, I have connected with some players, and they've also done some media availabilities with us. Look, before they went on their first road trip, and they went to Dallas, Chicago, and Minnesota about 10 days ago, Pierre Dorion gave them a pretty impassioned speech about, hey, make sure you're taking care of protocol. This is our first trip to the United States in, you know, since that infamous LA trip that I was just mentioned, mm-hmm. hey, make sure you're smart, make sure you're intelligent. So it wasn't like they weren't warned, and short of putting them back into a bubble, which they are now back kind of into a bubble, they were kind of warned, hey, make sure you're being extra cautious here. And you don't know who was kind of patient zero, so to speak, or who was the first right. one to get it and transmit it. But it was clear that something happened on that trip that spread it to the players. And I think that there's a little bit of concern for, and I'll use Nick Holden as an example. Nick is a guy who is in COVID protocol, and Nick Holden and his wife have 4 kids, I believe all under the age of 8 or 9. Mm-hmm. So now you're talking about guys with kids. So I think that's the biggest concern, Jeff, is sure. in talking to the players, it's the guys who have kids, and there's not many because this is a young group, but there's the concern. But the weird thing is, my understanding too, and I think DJ Smith did mention this today too, Josh Brown and Victor Mete had to drive home from Boston. Because they tested positive, they weren't allowed to get on the plane. And I know there are going to be people saying, well, wait a minute, how were they allowed to cross the border if they tested positive? I believe my understanding now that the land border is reopened, you can come back over the border with a positive test on the condition that you strictly adhere to the quarantining rules set out. So those guys would have to come back and they'd have to quarantine. And I think if you're following the Canadian quarantine rules, I think that's 14 days that they can't.
2 weeks, I believe, yes.
Yeah. So we're now looking at an Ottawa team that's going to be shorthanded here probably for the better part of this month. And guess what? They got a couple more trips coming up to the United States. So this is going to be really tricky. And I do think for the guys that have kids and young families, it's stressful. Yeah. And they're starting to isolate and starting to stay in hotels. And they're going back to as if they were in a bubble like that they were last year.
Well, that's what I was hoping you would get to here. And I'll leave you on this one because I know you have a really busy afternoon. I appreciate any time you give us today. As I understand, to that point, players are now in the process of staying away from their families, treating home games like road games. The families at home, but the players are at hotels. Is that pretty much team wide here, Ian?
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. My understanding is that it's, hey, we're going right back to as if we were the way we handled ourselves in the bubble last year. In fact, when they went to Boston and they were in their hotel, it was like, guys, it's room service. It's like team meals. It's you're not going out. You're not going out to a restaurant. You're not going out to get coffee. You're not going. It is locked right down. So they're asking everybody to lock it right down as if you're back in a bubble and you're trying to limit the number of people that you see. And like I said, this is what's really concerning is today it's Alex Formanton and Matt Murray. Yesterday it was Josh Brown. The day before it was Victor Mete. It would not shock me if tomorrow, Jeff, you wake up, you go to Twitter and player A and B have now been added to the COVID protocol list. So they're basically trying to treat it as if everybody could potentially has been compromised. And I think you're going to probably see this for the next 3 weeks. They are not doing any in-person media availabilities with us. Everything is going to be on Zoom until the 3rd of December.
The story continues. Ian, busy day for you. Appreciate the time. I know this is very last minute. I appreciate you making some time here for the program. Much appreciated for the expertise. Thanks, Ian. Much appreciated.
Any time for you, Jeff.
There he is, the great Ian Mendez, who covers the Ottawa Senators for The Athletic. And if you're just joining us, here's the very latest from the Ottawa Senators. They are scheduled to play the Los Angeles Kings tonight. That is one of 11 games on the board around the NHL. It is a very busy evening. Many people believe this game should not go on. This game should be postponed. I know that this is difficult to reschedule, and this is something the league has been very sensitive about. However, Alex Formanton, Matt Murray, both placed on the COVID-19 protocol list today. There are now 8 players and 1 coach on that list. Josh Brown, Connor Brown, Victor Mete, Dylan Gambrell, Nick Holden, and Austin Watson called up today from Belleville. Andrew Agostino, Dylan Hetherington, and Lassie Thompson have all been called up as of right now. Philip Gustafson is scheduled to start. This will be a story all afternoon long as we wait to hear official word whether this game will indeed proceed between the Ottawa Senators and the Los Angeles Kings. The other big story from most recent note in the NHL occurred last night, where Bob Murray officially resigned his post as executive VP and general manager of the Anaheim Ducks. He has announced that he will be entering an alcohol abuse program. Jeff Solomon takes over in an interim capacity as the general manager. Jeff Solomon had come over from the Los Angeles Kings, was part of that team that won a couple of Stanley Cups, wildly respected executive around the NHL, former player agent, we should throw in there as well. And to the best of my knowledge, after making calls about this, this was indeed, this investigation was initiated by the NHL hotline, which Gary Bettman and Bill Daly talked about during their press conference a week ago. There was one whistleblower who called the hotline. The investigation started, and then there were a number of people who spoke up to corroborate stories and leave their own stories. And I was, as I was told yesterday, sometime in the afternoon, it was not going to be possible at all for Bob Murray to return to the Anaheim Ducks. Now, the questions become, how much did the Samueli family know about Bob Murray, about the behavior around the office? This wasn't exactly a secret around the NHL. Bob Murray was someone who would never be described as having a soft touch. He was very much a, I'm gonna pick my words carefully here. He was very much a confrontational, some would say aggressive, some would say hostile person to deal with at pretty much all levels. I mean, everybody sort of talked about this being, well, that's Bob Murray. I think it's great that now survivors are feeling empowered to speak up, and survivors are feeling supported enough that they believe that when they speak, their voices will be heard. So that is encouraging. And two, it is good that Bob Murray is getting the help that he needs. It doesn't mitigate any previous behavior, but it is good that he is getting that help. And again, I know it's not very fashionable to praise the National Hockey League right now. And yes, they, of course, still have some things to make themselves accountable for. And we all understand what those things are. But this hotline that has been established already has done some good and has brought a halt to the situation in Anaheim. And we'll see what happens next, because as we've pointed out from the beginning of all of this, and the Kyle Beach scandal, you know, has quickly expedited the NHL getting to, you know, rolling up their sleeves and making sure teams know what's under the hood. There is some good right now that is coming out of it. In the meantime, 11 games on the board around the NHL this evening. We'll talk to Eric Stevens more about the Bob Murray situation in Anaheim, Craig McTavish in hour two, Hal Gill as well. In the meantime, let's have a little sort of check up around the country for all the Canadian teams and have a peek at, you know, what's under their hood by way of, we all know who looks good, you know, if you just look at goals and assists and points, but how about the underlying numbers for a lot of these players? What are we missing? How are our eyes lying to us on a consistent basis? Someone that knows the answer to this question is Mike Kelly, our good friend from the NHL Network and proud papa. I want to throw into the mix as well. How you doing today, Pops?
I'm doing great, thank you. Yeah, about a week into it with number two, baby number two, and it couldn't be better.
Yeah, it's like I always say to everyone, it's the, you've never been more tired and more happy all at the same time. It really is a unique feeling. Mike, first of all, thanks so much for joining me today. I want to get to a really interesting observation you made on the NHL Network about Alexander Ovechkin not too long ago. But first, as you look around, and we'll just focus on the Canadian teams for purposes of this program, as you look around the Canadian teams, it's easy to look at Connor McDavid and go, wow, that guy's really good. Look at Leon Draisaitl and say, hey, what a hockey player they have there, whether it's Matthews or Marner, and go right through, you know, all the teams. But who are we missing on? Like, who, from your point of view, you know, the as they refer to them, boxcar numbers don't really tell the whole story. Who amongst the Canadian teams, if we can sort of rifle through them, who are we missing on out there?
Well, it's a great question. And look, obviously, I use analytics as a big part of what I do in my job as an analyst. And, you know, sometimes it's great to point out, yeah, Connor McDavid is off to a great start and look at all that he's creating off the rush and whatever. But we know all that, right? What really interests me is what you're talking about, which is, who are the guys that are maybe going to pop, or who are the guys that are doing things that, you know, maybe aren't being fully appreciated? Lot we can choose from. Let's go to Calgary first of all, where the Flames had a really nice start to the season, 7-2-3. The biggest adjustment I've seen there came from Daryl Sutter as soon as he took over, and it was, how do we address the fact that we give up a ton of speed through the neutral zone and get killed off the rush and allow a lot of goals as a result? He did that right away, and I'm looking this year at the D pair of Chris Tanev and Oliver Shillington and the tremendous job that they've been able to do together. We've seen Tanev, I don't want to say prop up, but elevate the game of a guy like Quinn Hughes in Vancouver.
Yes.
We saw what happened when Tanev left. Now we're seeing it with Shillington, but I want to give him his due credit also, because he's been really good for the Flames. Not a guy that turns the puck over. Both of these guys make a great first pass out of the zone. That helps you alleviate pressure. Tanev's a better puck mover than I think he probably gets credit for. He's more physical than Shillington, but Shillington can move the puck well also. And what you end up with is a D pair that has an expected goal rate of 65% in about 140 minutes. And that's a big part of Calgary turning around that transition game and finding more success.
You know, let me just pause on Shillington there for a second. I was making the point the other day, Mike, that I don't know that I've seen, and again, we're like a dozen games into this thing, but I don't know that I've seen a player that year over year has improved as much from last season to this season as Oliver Shillington. Like, I know coming out of camp, there was the, you know, what's going to happen? Looks like he's earned his way on the team. What's going to happen with waivers and sending him down, etc.? Like, he just flat out looks like a different player now. But that's where I always sort of, you know, defer to someone like you and say, well, is he really a different player, or is he just in a different environment?
The environment helps. Like, obviously playing with Tanev, who's so good defensively, that's going to help any defenseman. And I also think that because of the way that Daryl Sutter has this team playing now, a lot more connected, you're getting more help from your forwards for breaking pucks out, for you know, trying to kill cycle plays in your own end and take away some of the pressure defensively. So you couldn't ask for a better guy to play with than Chris Tanev if you want to be an effective D pair. And then you marry that with what Daryl Sutter's been able to do to get this team to play as a, you know, that's a cliche, but it's true, the five-man unit in all three zones. And his growth as well as a defenseman, being 24 years old and pretty early in his NHL career, I think just over 100 games. So throw it all together, and I'm with you. A huge progression in this game.
Let's go to Chris Tanev's former team, the Vancouver Canucks. And my default here might be, if I was going to throw a dart, I'd say, you know what? I bet Mike says something about Connor Garland. Am I on the mark or off the mark?
I was looking at two people, and he was the second guy. The guy I kind of dove a little more into was JT Miller. Just because I don't think he probably gets the love he should get. Maybe in Vancouver, I don't live in the market right now, but certainly outside of it, a big piece of a big line there. And, you know, they're leading scorer, obviously, but we focus a lot on Besser and Pettersson. Garland's been good, no doubt about that. JT Miller's a tremendous playmaker, and one of the areas that I look at to start identifying top playmakers or guys that are projecting to pick up more assists going forward is how many passes are you getting into that slot area for your teammates to ultimately create scoring chances. It's a huge driver of assists, and he's number one in the NHL. The guys right behind him are McDavid, Draisaitl, Panarin, and DeBrincat.
Wow.
A lot of them come on the power play. That's fine. But he's setting up a lot of good opportunities, and he plays with guys that can finish. We know that. So also, he's top 10 in the league in offensive zone puck possession, being able to have the puck, protect it, lose a guy, make a play, those kind of things. So I think just for the fan listening across the country, they might not identify JT Miller as a top end playmaker. I certainly do.
You know, one of the things I love about him, just as an aside, and I know there's, you know, sort of way to evaluate it, is I just love cranky hockey players. Like, I have all day, yeah. I have all day for the Chris Prongers and the Ryan Kesslers, and for this conversation, the GT, you know, the guy, you know, Mike, the guy that shows up and the first thing he does is complain about the coffee first thing in the morning at the skate. That's my guy. I love
Coffee's
guys like
no
that.
Good. Ice is no good.
Yes. Yeah.
Sticks off.
Where's the tape? Yeah. Where's all the clear? What's going on? What kind of operation we running here? What about the Oilers? Like, it's easy to say McDavid, it's easy to say Leon Draisaitl. Who else should we pay attention to?
Oh, let's go to Zach Hyman. He's fit in like a glove. I don't think anyone's surprised by that. But he's kind of split time with Yamamoto and Nuge on one line. Expected goal rate of 79%. That is absurd.
Wow.
And when he's playing with McDavid and Puljujärvi, I mean, they've been good as well. But yeah. I wrote an article about this for you guys at Sportsnet last year. What I've tried to impress upon people is last year, Hyman took such a big step in moving, like playing with the puck more, not just getting it and looking for someone or getting it and dumping it, but trying to make plays. And he's got good speed and he's more skilled than people realize. And I think we really saw that for the first time in his career at this level last year, and is continuing that this year. And so he's got 7 goals in 11 games. It's a bit of a heater to start a year. And with most cases, it's well, you are probably going to see a regression of some sort. And there may be, I think there will be, but his expected goals is also number one in the NHL at 7.8. So he's basically scored in line with the chances he's been able to produce for himself. That's a good thing. So I just love the flexibility it's given Dave Tippett in the top six. It's the missing piece. That puzzle in the top six to me is now complete with the progression of Puljujärvi and with Hyman being there, because you can move Hyman up and down on either one of these lines. If you want to put the two stars together, yeah. It's all good. I think that's made such a difference for them.
You know, his nickname, and listen, we know that hockey players and hockey in general doesn't have clever nicknames anymore, but if I'm giving Zach Hyman a nickname, it's karma. Because I don't know what he did in a previous life to deserve playing with Austin Matthews and now Connor McDavid. Like, was he a saint or what? You know, did he like heal people up and, you know, save people from burning houses? I don't know. But this guy's kind of had a luxurious career playing with the two top centers
NHL. Not a guy who had a whole lot handed to him. Like, great work ethic, as you know, a great guy.
Yeah.
So I don't know what he did in another life, but you're happy to see good things happen to good people, obviously,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, real generous guy as well. Like, he's done a lot for his dad's, you know, OJ team, the Markham Royals, and is always around the rink and really generous with his time, writing kids' books. I'm like, I said this to my wife the other day. I'm like, who could, like, there's got to be like some dark underbelly to Zach Hyman that we're all missing. Like, what kind of human being is this? We're not used to like decent people, for crying out loud, that are successful. Okay. Winnipeg Jets. Who does it for you there?
Winnipeg Jets, Dubois, big bounce back year. I think that's been great. And what's cool to me too, is that they've moved away from Wheeler, Shifley, Connor, and try to spread things out a little bit more. Some of those guys, not Connor, the other two, need to try to find the back of the net a bit more, obviously, and they will. But Dubois clicked really well on that line with Svechnikov and Connor. And 7 goals, what I like about his game this year is going to the front of the net, and he's making it happen from an area that he should be, because he's so big and he's got good hands and good instincts. You know, for him, he's top 10 in the league right now in rush chances and rebound chances. So you're looking at a guy who can, you know, pick up speed in the neutral zone and take it to the net, but also a guy who can arrive at the right time and park himself there and get those opportunities as well. 6 of the 7 goals right from that inner slot area. He leads the team in shots from that net front area with 11. And he's generating shots from that high danger area where half the goals in the league are scored. It's important. At twice the rate that he was last year. So getting a lot more done right from in front, and that's where he should be.
You know, he played his junior hockey outside of his last part of his final season. He played, you know, mainly with the Cape Breton Screaming Eagles, and he played on a line with Svechnikov, another player, a Russian player by the name of Maxim Lazarev. And, you know, he was talking to me and Elliot about this during the players tour, just about how they complemented each other and how, even though there was a language barrier, there's a sort of language of hockey, and he just loves the way that Yevgeny Svechnikov plays. So it really should come as no surprise. I think he was part of the lobbying group as well to try to get Svechnikov into the Winnipeg Jets organization. Big win by the Maple Leafs last night. They defeat the Philadelphia Flyers. Jack Campbell with the shutout, William Nylander with the pair, almost had the hat trick as well. Do you have your eyes on Nylander or someone else in Toronto, Mike?
Yeah, Nylander right now. And look, I guess you can look at it in how many goals have been scored by the core four in a row. And, well, what about the depth? Well, what about these guys? What about William Nylander, who's, I guess, the fourth guy in that mix? He's been great, and I guess he's kind of polarizing in Toronto in that market, in a sense.
Oh, yes.
I'm not entirely sure why.
Oh, yes.
Like, yeah, and, you know, coaches might love him one day and be frustrated the next. But if we want to talk about what he's done this year and you know what he's shown he's capable of doing, he's second in the league to Ovechkin in shots right now. He's first in shots from the slot. He's fourth from that net front area, the inner slot. Maybe some fans don't know that he gets to the dangerous, highly contested areas as often as he does. And he's created more scoring chances off the cycle or benefited from others creating those chances for him by getting open in those quality areas more than anybody in the league. So go ahead.
I was going to say it's a great point about going to the quote-unquote dangerous areas because I think outside of John Tavares with the two on the team, I think outside of John Tavares, nobody spends more time in front of the net than Nylander does. Mm-hmm. I think what may sour a lot of Maple Leafs fans specifically, and this is just an optics thing, is Maple Leafs fans like physical play around the boards, and that is just not William Nylander's game. He's got a great stick with takeaways there, but he's not a physical guy around the boards. And maybe this just isn't, maybe this isn't exclusive to Toronto, but it seems if hockey fans love players that play physical around the boards, and that's just not Nylander's game.
That may be true, and when you've got, he's playing on a line right now with Austin Matthews and Michael Bunting. So Bunting is really good forechecker, really good getting into battles. He's not a big guy, but he's feisty. Yeah. Austin Matthews is one of the better players in the league at winning puck battles in the offensive zone, at getting to loose pucks. He's a big body guy, and because he shoots the lights out and scores 1,000 goals a year, people don't really focus that much on that part of the game. And if he's playing with Tavares, Nylander, Tavares really good in that area as well. He doesn't have to do those things. I wouldn't even want him doing those things with the other guys. I'd want him finding those soft spots in front of the net. He's got a great shot and he can score. So if I'm a fan, I like a guy that scores goals, picks up points, and helps me win hockey games. And that's what William Nylander does.
And all of a sudden, folks, the contract doesn't look bad. And you know what? It probably never was. The Ottawa Senators, just talking to Ian Mendez here about this a couple of seconds ago, 8 players on COVID-19 protocol right now. They're playing Los Angeles tonight. From an underlying numbers point of view, who do you look for on Ottawa?
Jimmy Stützle. Jimmy. The 749 players in the league this season, there's not a single player who has underperformed their expected goals total. That's the quality, the quantity of their chances more than Tim Stützle, who's got 0 goals. But he should have about 3 or 4 right now based on the chances he's been getting. I grew up in Ottawa. My family's there. I've got friends there. They're big Senators fans. And they all know how good he's been. They watch all the games and say that there's a lot of nights where this guy's their best player. So I don't think fans are nervous about him not getting it going. And he affects the game in a lot of other areas as well. He's a great skater, as we know, drives possession, gets to loose pucks. His defensive game's been fine. Good results while he's been on the ice. So, when he was with Batherson and Norris, that line was great. Stützle's last game, he had, 3 really good looks, a couple on the power play. So it's coming. I know Sens fans want to see those pucks start going in the net. But he's to me been really, really good for them, and a guy that just keeps getting better, a guy that I love watching. I'm sure you do too.
Red line to red line, the guy's spectacular. The only problem is you point out he just can't get the puck over the red line. But red line to red line, it's pretty impressive so far. We'll finish up with the Montreal Canadiens. They'll face off against the Calgary Flames later on this evening. Ryan Poehling is in, Jake Allen starts, and Mike Kelly has his eyes on who?
I'm going to leave this one up to you. You want to, Habs, it's been a nightmare this season. Do you want to go positive with Anderson or you want to go negative with Jake Allen?
No, I want to go positive with Anderson.
All right. So Josh Anderson leads the NHL in scoring chances created off the rush, 19. This is good. We know the big body player that he is, the speed that he has, when he can kind of drop that shoulder and cut to the net. And I've watched the clips. He's got a lot of good chances this season in doing just that. The positive there for me is that he's not playing with necessarily the best players. There's no one guy that's like, yeah, this guy's going to drive a line or this guy's going to get us that goal and we need it on the team. You got to create some offense on your own. He's been doing a lot of that. So he's only got a few goals this year, but I'm watching these chances that he's getting. I'm seeing how many he's producing off the rush and getting in, and we know that he can score that way as well. He could have a couple more goals at this point of the season. And he's going to be a guy that has to drive the bus for them offensively. So another one of those guys kind of like Stützle where I'd say just keep doing what you're doing, you're going to see the goal production start to go up a little bit.
And Anderson, I believe one of the only players in the history of the NHL to fight both Milan Lucic and Zdeno Chara in their career. Who chooses to do that,
ooh,
Mike?
Bad,
who
bad
chooses
idea.
That? It's not a great
plan.
Not
the 6'2", 175-pound analytics guy, that's for sure.
Well, you're great at what you do. Listen, that's a lot of expertise you just shared. We really appreciate it. Congrats again on child number two. Health and happiness to everyone in the Kelly family. Thanks so much for this, Mike. This has been really enlightening and interesting as well. I think the listeners really appreciated it, as I do. Thanks so much for stopping by today, Mike. You be well.
Yeah, my pleasure. Keep up the great work. Love the podcast. And
thanks, pal. There's Mike Kelly from the NHL Network breaking down some of the players that you might want to pay a little bit more attention to based on the underlying numbers. Not just the goals and the assists and the points, and for some of you, the plus minuses, but some of the more underlying numbers that we use to measure hockey players. We'll step away. Don't forget, Craig McTavish, top of hour two from the NHL on Sportsnet. He worked the Philadelphia-Toronto game last night. Get his thoughts on the Leafs and Flyers. Also, should probably park some time to talk about Kevin Lowe, who will go into the Hockey Hall of Fame on Monday night. So we'll park that. And Hal Gill, Nashville Predators radio analyst. They stuck the Dallas Stars last night. Dallas is in a bad situation right now. What's next? Who knows? Players only meeting last night. That's never a good thing. But joining us next, he's Eric Stevens of The Athletic, covers the Anaheim Ducks. The Stuck team is hot on the ice, chaotic off of it. Bob Murray yesterday stepping down as general manager and entering an alcohol rehabilitation center. What's next for Anaheim? Eric Stevens has that answer as the Merrick Show continues across the Sportsnet radio network.
Gets off the other way. Terry's out of gas. He sends it ahead, trying to bring it with him. Spinning in on the backhand is Drysdale, and he didn't get a very good shot away, but he forced a save from Halak. A minute 20 left. Again, numbers as Miller storms in. Drysdale catches him on the back check. Up and down we go. Ducks have numbers. Getzloff, Terry, and Drysdale into the zone. Getzloff over for Terry. He scores! Troy Terry wins it in overtime on a spectacular pass from Ryan Getzloff.
Ducks are hot on the ice. Winners are 5 in a row. Tonight they'll face off against the Seattle Kraken at 10 o'clock Eastern. Off the ice, the story involves Bob Murray, now ex-general manager of that organization. Jeff Solomon takes over on an interim capacity. This after 24 hours or 48 hours now ago, he was placed on administrative leave. Yesterday he resigns as executive VP and GM and announces he is entering an alcohol abuse program. Let's turn our attention now to the Anaheim Ducks, both on and off the ice. Eric Stevens, our good friend from The Athletic, joins us, covers the Ducks on a regular basis. Eric, good afternoon. Thanks so much for doing this. How are you today?
I'm well, Jeff. Great to be back on with you. How are you doing?
I'm doing good, man. Great to hear your voice once again. And before we get to the Troy Terrys and the John Gibsons and some of the really good performances we're seeing out of the Anaheim Ducks early on this season. The story of the last 48 hours has involved the Anaheim Ducks front office and Bob Murray, Henry Samueli acting on a tip to the NHL hotline, investigating some of the behavior of the now ex-general manager of the Anaheim Ducks. And yesterday, Bob Murray submitted his resignation from that post. Jeff Solomon takes over on an interim capacity. You know, one of the things we've been talking about the last couple of days here is everybody has had an experience with Bob Murray, and we know how Bob Murray, you know, spoke to people and how he's, behaved with, whether it's, you know, other colleagues, whether it's media people, whether it's athletes. Did any of this surprise you, Eric?
Well, you know, Jeff, that's a really good question. And in the people, at least in the people that I've talked to who have had connections to the organization, to connections with Bob himself, who know the Ducks organization whatsoever, you know, the common thread has been that they're not surprised, mm-hmm. at an investigation being made and then ultimately the move that was done yesterday. You know, as far as myself, and I myself have, you know, never, you know, have had basically the usual reporter source relationship, you know, over the years, you know, where, you know, it's largely cordial. Sometimes, frayed, or, you know, sometimes there's friction, but that's natural. But also, having heard things that I wasn't able to say verify or get on record whatsoever. I guess it's not completely surprising that this kind of ending has happened, because anyone that knows Bob, he's a high strung individual. He is a immensely competitive person. And sometimes that the combination of that competitiveness and anger, if you will, or whatsoever, you know, as we've seen, as it's come to scene, or whatsoever, goes overboard. It goes over, you know, and as we've seen, over the top and allegedly abusive.
Jeff Solomon, we should mention, takes over on an interim capacity from Bob Murray, who resigns yesterday. What are the get this out so our listeners all understand. Bob Murray's been the general manager since Brian Burke left to go to Toronto back in 2008. So it's been a sizable length of time that Bob Murray's been in this chair. And you just, you know, recently published a piece in The Athletic about, you know, Bob Murray and his time running the Anaheim Ducks, and how will we look back at it. When it comes to the, you know, office behavior and, you know, what the relationships were like, one of the things that I'm really having a hard time with, Eric, is the idea that any of this would be a surprise to the Samueli family. I know right now everybody's looking for a raincoat. You know, when the Kyle Beach scandal happens and everybody wants to make sure that they're covered. And the NHL has told teams, you know, make sure you have a handle on your organization. Know what's under the hood of the car here. I'm having a really hard time thinking that Henry Samueli was surprised at any of this at all. Are you troubled by that as well, or do you have the same types of questions?
It's a question that I have, no doubt. I mean, is, you know, and I feel that it's something that P has to address at some point. I mean, you know, this was a pattern of behavior. This wasn't something that just, you know, that only happened a week ago, 2 weeks ago, 2 months ago, 2 years ago, whatever. This was, you know, a pattern that, and so how much did he know? How much was kept from him? You know, how much was, you know, was there a sort of blind eye towards the actions, you know, the improper actions that, you know, that Bob had on staff, as we've seen players and coaches even as well. You know, how much of this was enabled? For sure, Jeff, I think what you have and others and I myself have, you know, are real questions that, you know, that I think, you know, Henry and or Susan, you know, need to address here, you know, at some point. And as you alluded to it too, I mean, I think this in Chicago and other situations that have added up to this is a real clarion call, you know, across the league for, you know, teams and whatsoever individuals within the organizations to make sure and get their house in order.
Yeah. And the other, you know, positive thing coming out of all of this is it seems as if finally survivors are being listened to and supported, which hasn't always been the case. The Samueli family has always been private, and, you know, they're not owners that are out in front. They, you know, they're not in love with a microphone and a camera. Do you think that Henry Samueli, Susan Samueli comment publicly on this anytime, or do they just let the actions of Murray resigning and entering alcohol rehab speak for itself?
Yeah, I've asked this you know, with the individuals in the organization. And I'm led to believe that they, you know, that whether both or whether it's just Henry or Thorber, I'm led to believe that they both will. I mean, in my opinion, they must. They have to. You know, this you have, and as I wrote, you know, in the piece before or whatsoever, to me, this is where leadership is supposed to emerge.
We have a bad line right now with Eric. Lance back at Master, if you can give Eric a buzz back, that would be great. It was a really interesting answer as well, that the how much the Samuelis have to answer for this one. This isn't just a recent hire. This, you know, Bob Murray was there for a long time, took over the big chair in 2008. So the question becomes, how much did they know? And will they address that publicly? You know, there are some owners that like to be out in front of the franchise. You know, a lot of owners like buy the team so they can have some star time. That's not the Samuelis. The Samuelis very much exist behind the scenes of the Anaheim Ducks organization, don't want to put themselves out in front. But that is interesting that we do have Eric back. Eric, sorry, your phone kind of broke up there as you were talking about, you know, the Samuelis, you know, having to come out and answer some questions about this. Please proceed.
This is where leadership needs to be displayed. And they're at the very top of this here. This is a major issue. This is a major situation. This is the issue of our time in some respects. When it comes to hockey culture in general and fostering something that's healthy, or at least, you know, addressing and doing something about atmospheres that are unhealthy, that are toxic whatsoever. So this is where I feel they do need to, you know, show some leadership in this regard and being out front here. And as you alluded to it, yes, you're right. They are individuals that are generally hands off, not so hands off to where, I mean, you know, they do appear at, you know, Henry's at the draft and they do attend games and, you know, they're, you know, it's not that they're reclusive, but they clearly let their important subordinates, you know, be the voice of the team. But this is where I think they need to step out in front, here and address these important questions.
So what do you think is next for the position? Jeff Solomon is a wildly respected executive. He's in on an interim capacity to run the organization. The search has begun for a full-time general manager. I know that Jim Rutherford is very eager to get back into the game, either at the GM level, consultant level, team president level, etc. And there are others that are probably obvious as well. Do we have any idea which way the family may be leaning on that decision?
Yeah, you know, this one's going to be really interesting because they've only done one hire with regard to this position, and that basically was transferred from Brian Burke to Bob Murray. So, you know, as they said in their statement, that they intend to do, you know, a search, and something that's going to take some time, and that, you know, perhaps they won't even, you know, make a permanent hire until after the season. Yeah, there's in-house candidates. They can go that route. If it isn't somebody that's Jeff, who I think, you know, has certainly an opportunity in front of him, given, you know, the way the team is going right now. There's Martin Madden, who's a widely respected scout who was promoted to assistant general manager. He certainly would be a candidate without question. Dave Notice, we know, has run teams in Vancouver and Toronto, so he obviously brings experience. But yeah, there will also be candidates outside the Ducks that I would imagine would be very interested, because this is a team where, yes, it's been painful for the last 3 years, But they've certainly shown signs of life, and they constructed, you know, to which you have to give Murray some credit here. They've constructed a young base that, you know, could be the next core of the team, you know, to lead it back into contention.
Absolutely. Eric, I want to get to the Ducks on the ice. It's a great story right now. Winners are 5 in a row, looking for their 6 as they face off against Seattle tonight. I'm just going to get way ahead of myself here, if you'll indulge me. Troy Terry, Olympian, your thoughts?
Well, he's been an Olympian before. yeah, you know, I mean, he's got experience in that regard. he looks like a completely different player with the way he's going right now. It's ironic, too. You know, he had a quiet first game. And then the second game, he essentially was scratched or so. And Dallas Eakins has said that ever since then, it's as if, you know, maybe the light bulb, you know, really went off. Troy Terry has always had good to, you know, skill and offensive ability. And he's shown it in flashes. You know, the thing is that he was hadn't been able to, you know, extend that into something, you know, consistent, something, you know, where, you know, that had staying power. He is a supremely confident player right now. And I think he's better able now to handle the ups and downs of what the grind of the league is now. I think, you know, he was one where confidence or the lack of it was almost worked as a detriment. Because when he didn't play well, he got down on himself, and he let it, and it would affect his play. I think he's more mature now. You know, he's 24. I think he's better able to handle it. He's just, like I said, he just looks like a completely different player, you know, on the ice, you know, perhaps even dominant in a few instances.
Yeah, the puck touches his stick and a red light goes off. It's remarkable. Listen, Eric, it's great hearing your voice again. Great catching up, my friend. I love your Twitter bio, appealingly goofy. I love it. You be well, my friend. Continued success and great piece on Bob Murray that's up at The Athletic right now. Thanks so much for doing this.
Hey, thanks, Jeff. It's great to talk to you again. Be well.
You be well as well. Eric Stevens covers the Anaheim Ducks for The Athletic. Bob Murray yesterday resigning as general manager. Jeff Solomon takes over on an interim capacity. This after being placed on administrative leave the day previous by Henry Samueli, the owner of the Anaheim Ducks. It was the NHL hotline and a tip there that got that investigation rolling, which ultimately led to Bob Murray resigning. We're going to come back with hour two of the program here in a couple of seconds. More hockey talk. Craig McTavish from the NHL on Sportsnet, Hal Gill, Preds radio analyst. But just to catch up on, you know, one of the big stories going on right now around the NHL, and that is the Ottawa Senators, who now have 8 players in COVID protocol after adding Alex Formanton and Matt Murray today. So they join Josh Brown, Connor Brown, Victor Mete, Dylan Gambrell, Nick Holden, Austin Watson, and assistant coach Jack Capuano on the protocol list. Ottawa faces off against LA later on this evening, one of 11 games on the board. And as Ian Mendez told us, a number of players right now are not even going home. They're just staying at hotels, trying to keep themselves away from their family, awaiting more testing. And we'll see what happens when test results come in from today's testing tomorrow. Some talk about people thinking this game should be postponed, but we'll see. Ottawa Senators face off against the Los Angeles Kings in the nation's capital later on this evening.